Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the Yanks Go Yard podcast with Adam Weinrib and Thomas Carinante.
What up? What up? Welcome to a Monday edition of the Yanks Go Yard podcast. I'm Adam Weinrib alongside Thomas Carinante. The Yankees and Dodgers played a World Series preview in the Bronx this past weekend. And I'm not just saying that because the Yankees couldn't hit with runners in scoring position in the first two games. Really felt like the playoffs, both because of what the Yankees offense looked like and because of the energy of the crowd. But another resounding argument that this year could be different. They lose Juan Soto for the series. He should be back soon. They're operating at not 100%. They drop the first game in agonizing fashion. They hang around for a while in the second and just get the doors blown off late. And then they win a finale so special that you kind of forgot that they lost the first two in the salvage, which is the polar opposite of 2021. The first, a lot of people are going to compare this season, and we get it, to 2022 when the Yankees just blitzed out to an absurd start and then fought the regression monster for the whole second half, made the worst trade deadline acquisitions you've ever seen, changed their roster's vibes, and ultimately fell in the ALCS in a sweep. Instead, I'd rather compare it to being the polar opposite of 2021 because that team made the playoffs. The team went on a win streak in the middle of the summer. That team also knew how to extinguish the vibes at an all-star level. Like, no team I've ever seen has been more expert at wrecking the vibes just when they were starting to get good. They would win the first two games of a tough series and blow a four-run save in the third one. They would always, always, always lose the finale. Sometimes in a blowout, sometimes clogging the bases and not knocking runners in. Sometimes, again, gagging at the horn, often to their rivals. It was a uniquely painful season. And this year so far, through early portions of June, has felt like the exact opposite. They usually come through. They usually handle business against tough opponents, against easier ones. And then in series where they do look flat, they'll grab a salvage at the horn to make you go, oh, well, that was pretty amazing and indicative of what I believe this team's peak could be. I kind of forgot about the record is good enough that I forgot about the other stuff. And what I remember is this. And what I remember from this series is going to be the Trent Grisham game. Is going to be Clay Holmes getting Mookie Betts. Is going to be Luis Gil not quite having his best stuff and Luke Weaver coming in and turning the double play that changed everything. I'm obviously going to remember Juan Soto not playing in this series because when it comes time for October, hopefully Dodger fans will chirp about taking over the stadium and Dodger fans will chirp about the energy they brought and the way their team played. And we're going to get to say, you haven't played Juan Soto yet. Let's see how this plays out. Hopefully. Cody Poteet played a major role in this. How do we keep him around? The world finally tying into Anthony Rizzo's struggles and realizing that we might have to make a change here. The lessons we learned, the happiest times and the angriest times from an unbelievable three-game set against the Dodgers. And joining me as always, Thomas Carinante, who will start us off with an offer.
Yes, sir. Welcome in, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Caesars Sportsbook, they are here. They are trying to cover your first bet up to $1,000. Can you believe that? New customers will get a second chance bet up to $1,000 when you use and – or I'm sorry, not use. You got to sign up. You got to be a first-time user, and you got to use our promo code YGY1000. That means if your first bet loses, you will get your full wager returned as a bonus bet, again, up to a maximum of $1,000. Caesars offers daily profit boosts as well as Caesars rewards credits on every wager, which can be redeemed for bonuses, sports tickets, and other VIP experiences. Signing up with our code YGY1000 not only covers your first bet, but it also gets you access to Caesars' fantastic rewards program. So if you're looking to join Caesars, go ahead, download the app, register with our promo code YGY1000, or tell all your friends who are trying to get involved and are new users, family members, whoever, be sure to get that first bet covered. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 and older and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. The Dodgers fan chirping. Let's get this out of the way.
Yeah.
Have they forgotten that the last two times we played, we were in LA. We won both those series.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an overwhelming presence of Yankees fans. Not like they didn't dominate the stadium, but you saw them, you heard them. They were very much present.
It's now, the Dodgers, number one road series that everybody wanted to go to. I remember last summer and 2019, it was like every Yankee fan worth their salt was like, I'm making the trip to LA. I'll be there. And they were able to get tickets.
Yeah. And it's like, and now like they're talking shit. It's like, oh, this is Dodgers fans took over Yankee Stadium. They took the first two out of three games. And it's like, yeah, I mean, A, it's a national fan base. B, you have a contingent on this side of the country because this franchise existed in Brooklyn for its first 60-something years. So I know a lot of Dodgers fans defect. What did Brooklyn Dodgers fans become? Mets fans or Giants?
Mostly Mets fans, where they abandoned baseball entirely. But no, they didn't, because they always lie about that, and that never happens.
But either way, there's a baked-in contingency on this side of the country for Dodgers fans. So any series where the Dodgers are coming to town, we can expect a fair percentage split in the crowd because – they're not having to travel as far. And also it's a national fan base. So that you add that in with any other team that has that large of a fan base, and you're going to have those other people in the stadium. So I don't know what all this chatter was about. It definitely didn't influence the series. What influenced the series is Juan Soto being out for the first two games and the Yankees turning back the 2023 roster for 48 hours, which is a fear, which we'll get to in a second. But overall, it's June. I don't care. Moving on.
It ended up pretty much exactly like what we were saying it would be. It's like a mid-season tournament. It's like the FA Cup. You wish Soto had been there so that it was as star-studded as it could have been.
Yeah.
And that first game was awful. I mean, it was just terrible. But only on one side of the ball. I mean, the pitching gave you a lot to be proud of until we started getting into Dennis Santana territory. And then we realized, we not only can't be doing that anymore, we can't be doing that ever again. People will laugh and say, it felt like the postseason because the Yankees couldn't hit tough pitching in the opener and the second game.
I just couldn't hit either.
The first game again, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, a $330 million man in the first game. Also, the fastball velocity ticked up a little bit, evidently motivated to play the New York Yankees, a team that he strung along for 2.5 months in the offseason. We wish him well, but guess what? He was matched pitch for pitch by Cody Poteet, who is an argument for why the Yankees did not sign Yoshinobu Yamamoto. The Dodgers made a generational commitment to somebody who might be an absurd talent and has shown his warts at times, but overall is already rounding in the top form and is just 25. Good signing by the Dodgers if you have overflowing cash and you want to do that kind of thing and you want to sign top-tier pitching. Great job. Cody Poteet plucked off the scrap heap by Brian Cashman and Matt Blake. Brian Cashman forgot his name in an interview with Talking Yanks earlier this offseason, and now he's shutting out the presumptive NL champs. He can give you 5 shutout innings. Can he give you 7 and 8? Not right now. What do they need from a fill-in fifth starter, swingman? They need quality innings, 4 of them, 5 of them in chunks. 5 shutty against the Dodgers. Feels like maybe best-case scenario. Feels like maybe even a little more than they expected, and that's what they're getting for the league minimum this year. He matched wits with Yamamoto, went toe-to-toe. So I will say that was encouraging until obviously the 10th inning, the ball's on their bats, basically ghost runner on second, nobody out, Trent Grisham at the plate. They can't get it done. I'll give Dodgers fans credit. Certainly, we laughed at them earlier in the week. They were putting out missives on social that indicated they thought they were getting special treatment. They were like, a cop friend of ours is shutting the streets down outside the stadium so Dodgers fans can party all day. And it's like, they have no idea that the streets are always shut down outside the stadium. They really think somebody's doing that for them. And then, lo and behold, they actually are marching in the streets with the police escort. Good job by the Dodgers fans who orchestrated this. You had yourselves a fun time. You added to the atmosphere. But overall, sort of felt like a little in-season tournament, incomplete without Juan Soto. And the finale was just a 10 out of 10 baseball game and exactly what this Yankees team needed to make sure that they lost the series, yes, but they essentially held serve. They took punches. They gave one back out at the end of the series. I feel like we have to talk about Juan Soto.
Sure do.
Obviously. Because, you know, waiting with bated breath, the injury stuff that came out Thursday sounds like the literal worst possible injury. You see him leave the doubleheader early. You're like, okay, well, this is probably not just rest, right? This is probably an injury. Or, sorry, doubleheader, the rain delay game.
Yeah.
You see, you know, okay, it doesn't seem like you'd be giving your most important hitter rest in the middle of the sixth inning in a tight game. Wet grass. I mean, you'd rest Judge before you rested Soto. So, turns out it's horrible news. It's forearm discomfort, and the post game press conference and the fact that a surgeon had him checked out. It's immediately you're like, ah, Jason Dominguez. Like, no team, by the way, no team gets position player Tommy John like the fucking Yankees do. Gleyber Torres, Aaron Hicks, Didi Gregorius, Jason Dominguez. Now you have this lingering Soto worry. That's since the summer of 2017. By the way, give me a break. We're waiting with bated breath. The next day we get the MRI results. Elbow clean, forearm clean, just inflammation. Sounds good overall. Soto was available in the opener, but no, he wasn't. Soto was available in the finale. No, he absolutely was not. I don't care how much time he misses. Could put him on the IL. Boone seemed to dance around it and say, we don't think it's an IL trip. But
per usual.
Look, I'm sure it is. And luckily, you've already taken up 3 days of a potential IL stint. But I literally could not care less. I did not need him in this series. If he had played Friday night after getting cleared, I would have lost my mind. It was already bad enough that he played through 2 weeks of inflammation without anybody checking it out. Like, congrats to the elbow surgeon who finally had to be like, did you guys get this checked out? Pain in the arm? You should get this checked out. Without the elbow surgeon, without the rain delay, would we have even known that Juan Soto was battling some sort of discomfort? Everything appears to be clean. That doesn't mean he's well and good. That doesn't mean he should play tonight, next day. I just need him in October because we saw what it looks like without him, and it's reminiscent of previous teams we've seen. You can win a game occasionally if Aaron Judge goes supernova. They did yesterday. Trent Grisham hits a three-run homer. That's going to happen once a year. Amazing game, but yeah, you can't lose Juan Soto for the games that really matter. And 46-21 in June, nothing is cinched up yet, but you've gotten yourself enough of a cushion that if he needs some more time off and some breather, give it to him. I'm not even going to question it. Don't care. I assume that you feel the same way. You don't need to see him ASAP, right?
Not at all. He should be. Scott Boras is not going to allow him, or he'll at least influence the decision. If there's any thought of Soto being rushed back into action before he's fully feeling better, Soto should be on that train too. Like, this is a contract year. It's very important. And again, the Yankees should be good enough. They have enough talent to weather the storm without Juan Soto. I understand the first 48 hours of this game looked terrible without Juan Soto. It looked like a rerun of 2023. And while I understand it's a concern to act like the sky is falling after two losses to the best team in the National League, is like, you're all losing your minds. People wanted him pinch hitting on Friday. People now all of a sudden want Gleyber Torres' head on a spike. People complaining about Anthony Rizzo's production. And it's like, all of this has been a problem for, you know, over a year now. The lineup sans Soto has always been a problem. Gleyber Torres' presence has been a problem for 4 years now. Anthony Rizzo has been bad for a full year now. Why are we all flipping out the moment things start not going our way and addressing all these issues?
Two-game losing streak, by the way.
Two-game losing streak. You know, we should have lost Friday. On paper, Cody Poteet versus Yoshinobu Yamamoto is a loss, arguably with Juan Soto in the lineup. Arguably, they should have won that game based on how everything transpired. They didn't. They can't bunt. They still have a little bit of trouble with situational hitting.
If he'd bunted the runner to third, Trevino pops out on the next AB, and it doesn't matter anyway. So, like, a competent team executing there, you know, good job. They get the run in, but it wouldn't have worked. Again, not going to be the pitching matchup guy. But Dodgers fans are going to make me be the pitching matchup guy. Yamamoto, Poteet, and Gavin Stone, Nestor Like, those are two of the three games in this series. Those are the two that you won. I mean, you couldn't have mapped that at any worse. It felt like the Dodgers arranged the rotation to compete at Yankee Stadium. And yeah. The Yankees were just like, who's up? No, it's a fill-in and our fifth starter. Okay, well, we'll try. Oh, we lost twice.
Yeah. But in terms of Soto and his health, like, there nothing is going to be more important than his availability for the rest of the season. And another thing, like, fans just don't understand anything. Soto goes down, or he said he was dealing with this upwards of 2 weeks. Wasn't affecting any baseball activities or what he was doing. Obviously, he had one player of the week a week ago and was still tearing the cover off the ball, was fine in the outfield. Nonetheless, the news breaks during the rain delay on Thursday, and people are like, oh, of course, this organization's cursed. Juan Soto's been an Iron Man for his entire career, and now, of course, he's going to get injured with the Yankees. And it's like, he absolutely has not been. Yeah, he's played in a lot of games per year, but last year alone, he dealt with a finger injury that required an MRI. He dealt with a hamstring injury that required an MRI. He got scratched from the lineup with back spasms. There was one other. He injured his oblique in spring training and got off to a slow start. Like, what are you talking about? Read a single news update. Juan Soto, yes, available, very reliable, good player. He is not without, you know, getting dinged up.
He was going to play through this. He did play through this. He had his best game of the season with this in San Francisco, the two home runs and the stunning shot in a deep right field in the ninth to flip that game. He can play through this. But where the Yankees currently are, why would he? Why would he? What is this deep abiding need that you need Juan Soto to play all 162 games? And look, I understand reactionary. Baseball's 162 one-game seasons, and we didn't like what we saw on Friday. But if you're honestly watching Friday's game being like, here we go again, this is what it's going to look like in the playoffs, it's the easiest thing possible for somebody to say. Because we've seen failure in the past. So when we see failure now, we're like, more of this. But like, it is June 7th, and we're resting our best hitter and most important player.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't agree with the 162 one-game season viewpoint anyway. That's I know people do that, and look, that's your fandom. That's your business. It's unhealthy. It's unhealthy. It doesn't provide the scope of what the marathon of 162-game season is, and it allows you to react in this manner. We're like, oh, well, here's 2023 roster all over again. It's like, okay, sure, we haven't played like that in 64 games. Why are we going to cry about it now? Why are we going to pretend like this is going to affect the remainder of the season? Yeah, if Soto's out for the entire season, that's a major goddamn problem. And the Yankees are going to be in trouble. And should they be in trouble? No, they shouldn't. This roster should be good enough to get by without Juan Soto, but a lot of problems have kind of popped up over the last few years. Juan Soto's presence, time and consequence with being able to trade for him for a year and not giving up a whole lot, has masked a lot of those problems, which are probably going to come to a head next year, or at the very least will go away in the a portion of them are going to go away in the offseason. So yeah, while I agree the Yankees should be a fine team without Juan Soto, that might not be the reality. But if he's out for a couple of days, let's not start, you know, rewinding back to all the shittiest moments you could possibly think of in your brain because you wanted to beat the Dodgers on Friday night and make fun of people on Twitter. I don't know. Exhausting with this entire thing just because, good, you lose a game, turn it off, go to bed, figure something else out, find a hobby for the next day in the morning to distract yourself. I really don't know. Juan Soto being out for a few days is not going to distract or is not going to take this team off its championship course. It's not going to change the complexion of the roster moving forward. Again, unless he's out for 2 months, unless he's out for the remainder of the year, sure. He's out for a few days as he's nursing a forearm issue that was deemed to be nothing after imaging and multiple tests from elbow doctors. So I don't know what the freaking out's about. Yes, again, would have loved to have him in this series. Would have been cool to have beaten the Dodgers at home. Would have been nice to have kept the momentum going. They got the job done on Sunday. They didn't get swept. You're probably going to lose that series with the Dodgers at full strength, mostly with their lineup. They had all their stars. They had Freddie Freeman. They had Shohei Ohtani. They had Mookie Betts. They had Will Smith. Everybody was there. We didn't have everybody. And you know, another realistic problem with this team is the bottom of the lineup doesn't produce. We can get to that in a minute too, but that's what's going to be magnified when somebody like Judge or Soto's out of the lineup, and fans are just going to have to deal with it because that's the reality of this roster. It's not changing that much until the off season.
Again, it's a big nothing that Soto missed this series, but the reason we were all on the edges of our seats on Thursday into Friday is because, yeah, without Juan Soto for the full year, they're doomed. It's over. This season has started off at a special clip, and yes, they still have the pitching, and yes, I don't think there's a team in baseball that has a better backup option than Jason Dominguez, so score for the Yankees, but the point of Jason Dominguez is that they need to find a way to work him into the current rotation of playing time with Soto and with Judge and with Verdugo and potentially even with Stanton, giving him some rest. So the reason why this team seems so dangerous is because they still have an extra weapon to play at AAA, not because, oh, they lost Soto and now they have a rookie filling in. And like, look, they would still be probably offensively competent at that point, but it definitely isn't the same vibe as, like, guess what? Juan Soto has changed this entire roster. And here's Aaron Judge on pace for 58 homers again. And here's Verdugo, who's the Nick Swisher of this team. And Stanton's OPS is up around 800. Like, and Anthony Volpe's OPS is up around 800. And, oh, by the way, we also have this rookie named The Martian who we're sliding in here. That is terrifying. The world where it's just like, yeah, Soto's gone, but now we have a kid in there. Isn't that cool? Is not quite as scary. I see a comment asking if Verdugo gets traded for bullpen help. I do not think the Yankees mess with the vibes of this outfield whatsoever. They need bullpen help. They'll figure out a way to get it. I do not think they trade off the major league roster for that to happen. Now, Verdugo is going to walk at the end of the year. But, I mean, I would genuinely be stunned based on the use they've had for Verdugo so far and the marketing of Verdugo so far this year if they decide to make a pivot, unless his season changes drastically and he hits a plateau in June and July. In that case, maybe. But I do, based on the way he has been the engine of this team, if they turn the keys over to Dominguez and decide mid-season that, oh, we have no more value and use for Verdugo, I don't see it. I mean, Monty Verbader, I disagreed with in the moment too, which is also being referenced in the comments. That trade proved to be a failure. But at least the Yankees theoretically had sort of a bunch of plug-and-play pitchers that year. I found it to be a vast miscalculation, and I still think it was predicated on doing a Gleyber Torres for Pablo Lopez trade that never happened, which made the whole thing look a lot worse. If that had happened and we lost Monty for Bader and Torres for Pablo Lopez and the rotation got better and Frankie Montas was there even though he was never healthy as a Yankee ever, I understand that series of bold swaps. Yeah. But the way it played out, I didn't understand it at all, and no, I would not think that the Yankees should do that again. It would be very, very dumb. Fingers crossed that never happens.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Moment you were the happiest in this series, talk about a little bit of the on-field action. I mean, I don't know how we're not sharing one here. I mean, it's just, well, I guess there are numerous moments from the final five innings.
It's really that, yeah.
But I mean, it's, for me, it's Trent. We want Grisham. We want Soto, Grisham. I don't know why everyone's on the fans' ass for chanting for Juan Soto there, as if that's disrespectful to Trent Grisham. It's a moment.
It's a tad disrespectful. I wouldn't get on the fans for it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's disrespectful, but it's not disrespectful to say we'd prefer Juan Soto in this clutch scenario to somebody who has three hits on the year. But guess what? What do you want to see from a player in that scenario who's challenged? a fucking bomb.
Yeah.
And a point to this guy that's like, you wanted Soto? Well, he's not feeling great tonight, but guess what? You got me. I tweeted before I got on the plane that, oh, I flew back yesterday. I missed the whole game. I landed with a 1-2 count to Mookie Betts in the ninth. You literally cannot make that up.
Nice.
But I tweeted, oh, I'm missing the game where Trent Grisham's batting fifth. Nice. Six. See you guys later. And then it turned out not only was that a memorable game, but it in fact hinged on Trent Grisham batting fifth. So shout out to me, reverse jinx king times 10 trillion, but, flight of the ball off Trent Grisham's bat there. I mean, that is just, sometimes baseball makes you make weird noises like, oh, and oh, and whoa, no way. And that was one of them. Holy shit. That was a home run.
Oh man. What was mine? I mean, that was happy for me. I would say that, what inning was it? I'm trying to, oh, it was the seventh, that defensive, rebound. Just because you're sitting there, Grisham hits the home run in the bottom of the sixth, you go up 5-3, doesn't really feel like the game's over though. It feels like, cool, this is going to maybe hold for an inning or two, but pitching's really got to tighten up and the lineup can't just give up after this. So Caleb Ferguson gets into that trouble as we all expected. And then the bunt, Trevino throws it down to third, ballsy play because Páez should have been safe, but he slid like an absolute moron and left his lead foot in the air the entire time. So that helped get the force out at third. And then Gleyber makes that nice play up the middle on Mookie Betts' grounder that hopped off the mound, unassisted double play. So that got me amped because there's been some defensive deficiencies in this series. That was a clear moment in time where it was like, great, we're just going to shit back all this momentum that we just took in the bottom half of the inning. And they're going to take advantage with the bottom of their lineup. That was 7, 8, 9 hitters that were making noise, and we managed to get through it. So I was happy with the defense there because they had been through some this series. Gleyber Torres particularly not good. This entire
wait, what? Your Gleyber Torres had some defensive lapses in this series. Are you sure about that?
Don't get me started. Don't get me started on Gleyber Torres.
Hey, only 12 more horrific defensive plays, and we can start to have a conversation about whether or not he might potentially be better suited for a different role moving forward down the line at some point in the years to come.
He's just a good player, man.
There's no point in having this conversation because every time he makes a horrific game-changing error, that means it's less likely to happen again in the future. Until it happens again in the future, based on a lot of probability, and then I have to once again evaluate, another data point in the bucket of Gleyber Torres as a poor defender under pressure. Well, I'm sure that won't happen again.
Yeah, very tough. And I mean, look, like, I didn't even say anything because the actions speak for themselves, and then you had people going off on social media about how he's not fit for this team and how Boone, like, defended him and then kind of didn't. I don't know. I'm sick of the press conferences, too. Like, I've kind of just channeled them out. Boone saying he's one of the better pop-up catchers the Yankees have. I don't even know what the fuck that means.
That sounded like the first – what?
He's going to catch some balls off the fungo bat.
June 10th.
Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah, we made it to June 7th without just like an all-time Boone-ism, but that's an all-time Boone-ism. Don't even say it. Like, I know you're just trying to defend him and –
there's no reason to defend him.
No, just say it's a mistake. Can't have that. Yeah. We're moving on.
It's like, so easy.
One of the best pop-up catchers. Like, we're joking. We're kidding. No one's going to be heartened by that. No one's going to write a story in the wake of the game being like, I actually looked into it, and Gleyber Torres is one of the best pop-up catchers of all time, as well as one of the best shoe tires. Like, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah. You know, it's so crazy, too, because I just watched the Yogi Berra documentary on Netflix. And I mentioned like last week or the week before that I watched the White Sox thing, yes. Bill Veeck, and everybody from 1980 prior, even like mid 90s prior, just like had the ability to speak and gave open-ended answers to questions and didn't stumble over their words and acted with some sort of conviction. And I know this has been a complaint for a long time because Aaron Boone is particularly bad with the media. A lot of the players are bad. Judge gave a refreshing interview during Sunday Night Baseball, or, you know, when they aired the interview during Sunday Night Baseball. I like the way Juan Soto talks, but everybody else is like, oh, you know, or long pauses, or just like contriving an answer that they think will be viewed acceptable. And I don't even know how we've gotten to that point, but it's just sad. It's like Gleyber Torres dropped an easy pop-up because he was trying to play it cool. Any other manager that does not put up with that just simply says what it is. It was a bad play. He knows he needs to do better. I got on him for needing to do better, and that's the end of it. That's all you got to say. I don't know why it's gotten progressively more difficult. I understand Aaron Boone might want to give the media a little bit more to work with, because you get asked a question like that and you're kind of just like, I don't know, dude, like, he shouldn't be fucking doing that, but like, figure out a way to not sound like this. Why am I seeing post-game clips of this? He's one of the better pop-up catchers we have. Even Gleyber took accountability for it, which I had to tip my cap to. He said the inning, you know, he took accountability for the botched double play on Saturday. That's a 4-2 game in the eighth. That double play ends the inning, or at least I think the next batter popped out or something, so it would have been the third out. And then they give up a grand slam because the inning keeps going on and Gleyber doesn't get any outs. And he said, yeah, this loss is probably my fault. I should have made that play. Okay, great. Moving on. That's all we need. I don't need a long explanation as to why you missed the ground ball. I don't need Aaron Boone telling me how good you are in practice. It's a big game. You made a mistake. You owned up to it. Don't do it tomorrow. That's it. I don't know why it's so complicated, but I mean, now I'm going to turn into an old guy because I'm watching all these old clips of people who knew how to speak, and it's discouraging me.
Well, it's weird. It feels like anytime you read somebody's famous quote from the 60s or 70s, whether it's an owner or player, like, they're always like very long, but they're almost like poetic. They're like
Scott Fitzgerald.
Yeah, they're like old British quips. They're like, after the game ending double play, like Al Kaline said, "'Tis better to hit into two than a one-er." I was like, what? It is true that it feels like writers embellished a lot more back then, and the players are just like, say whatever the fuck, I don't care.
Well, like, even Yogi, when he gets in the whole thing with George Steinbrenner, he's just like, the media asked him, he straight up, he's like, I have no interest in going back to the Yankees until George Steinbrenner wants to apologize to me for what he did. Direct, honest, emotional, that's it. Now everything else is just robotic, contrived, and it ends up being senseless. It's nuts.
Also, I don't know why we need some great gotcha quote from Aaron Boone on the dropped pop-up. The Dodgers didn't score in that inning. The Yankees lost like 3 hours later, and nobody remembered that there was a dropped pop-up in this game. But hey, Aaron, before you're done, I just need a hot take on Gleyber Torres' drop pop-up from hours ago. No, it was bad. It wasn't good. Thanks for asking. I assume that's the moment you're the angriest running through that post game. I mean, mine is obviously Trent. We can't bunt Grisham. I mean, love him by the end of the series, but there's a reason I tweeted, ha, oh, cool, this guy's batting fifth. Epic. Because game on his bat in the opener. You don't have to win anything when you're 46-21. You don't have to win anything, but once you get to the bottom of the 10th, you get that free runner, it's right out in front of you. It's right out in front of you.
Yeah.
There's no excuse. There's no excuse anymore. There's no, oh, it was Poteet versus Yamamoto. Oh, we were overmatched. Oh, we're missing Soto. The lineup isn't where it should be. No more of that. We've gotten ourselves to the bottom of the 10th. Game is yours now.
Yeah.
Guys standing on second, you could take it.
Yeah.
Like, did the Dodgers win that game without laying down a bunt in the top of the 11th? Sure. Would you rather just immediately hit a single, score that runner from second, walk it off? Absolutely. Offense is superior to sacrificing outs. But in the bottom of the 10th, when you just need the one run and the game ends and there's nothing the Dodgers can do about it, move that guy over.
Yeah.
Move that guy over. It's very simple. And then guess what? If you move that guy over and then you fail, which it seemed like they might have done anyway, because Trevino, who's been very clutch in that situation in the past, couldn't leave the infield, and then Anthony Volpe flew out. I guess what you could do there, in a hypothetical where we never got there because we never saw Trent Grisham move the runner over, is pinch hit Soto, who's mostly a decoy but has been playing through this for 2 weeks, probably could have played they probably walk Juan Soto. If they're smart, they walk Juan Soto. And then you get Volpe with runners on the corners. You pinch run for Soto at first. Volpe hits the same fly ball. They win the game. But either way, we never got there because the ball was in their court. This game, all it took was math to end it. Just station to station. Yeah. Like checkers, not chess. You don't have to do anything spectacular. You literally just have to execute two consecutive times and you win the game because you got far enough in a tie game that you afforded yourself that right, and they couldn't execute. And once that happened, who cares what happens in the top of the next inning? Who cares how soon Dennis Santana arrives? You had the game and you gave it away. They salvaged the finale. That's what we're going to really remember from this series. We're going to remember, damn, that last game was incredible, and Juan Soto didn't play. And they competed, and they took a couple punches from the NL's best, and they came out on top one out of three times. But no excuse really to lose that first game. Once you get it to the bottom of the 10th.
Look, I agree. I agree. Shitty games are going to happen, though. That's the reality of what, you know, life is with the baseball season. But you're going to have a number of games like that throughout the year. And I know that, when the reason why I understand the anger is because this series had more attached to it. It had the playoff feel. It had the national spotlight, Fox and ESPN, Apple TV. Is Apple TV national? I guess it is if you have Apple TV. So all those games are broadcasted on platforms where everybody could watch, and fart noise on Friday. But look, sometimes that's going to happen. Got to live with it. My angriest moment was Friday, and it wasn't because we lost. It was because the way the fans reacted. Like, again, we're in the national spotlight for this series. It is not just the players. It is not just the manager. It's not just the general manager. It's the fans. The fans were embarrassing. Absolutely embarrassing after that loss. Crying about shit that is unrelated. Crying about Gleyber Torres making an error that didn't even matter.
Fatalistic shit. It's over. It's over.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah, of course this was going to happen. What do you mean, of course? Like, I guess, of course, a bad game was bound to happen. Yes. Yes. Of course a bad game was bound to happen. There's 162 of them, and barely 60%, 65% go your fucking way. So, yeah, good chance 30% of the games in a given year are going to be not fun and bad. That's just, the way it is. But crying about, Anthony Rizzo, now all of a sudden, he sucks. This guy can't be on the team anymore. Gleyber Torres, get him out of here. Can't be on a World Series roster. Aaron Boone, whatever you're talking, like, you combine all the fans whining with then the stupid responses in the post game, and it's like, what are we – this is Bush League. Like, this is what the New York Yankees are in the public eye now. Mm-hmm. They've had barely any national exposure this year just because, I think we talked about it last year. Every Yankees Red Sox game was Sunday Night Baseball. Don't think we need that as a society. Really don't think we need that. There's a lot of other teams out there. There's a lot of other cool matchups. There's a lot of other cool players like that need to be on that spotlight and on that stage. Make it happen. Yankees finally get their opportunity this year, and it's you can't act like that. You can't have that be the discourse on social media, and we can't have these clips, or these portions of these media sessions clipped and thrown into the wild where we're looking like morons. So Friday night, set it and forget it. It's fucking done now, but stop acting like that.
Please. Lesson learned from this series, I feel like, is an important thing. Cause for me, it's obvious. The takeaway that's just screaming at me from the totality of the three game series, especially because of the order of operations here. Don't waste roster spots. Just don't do it. Don't get bogged down in your technicalities and be afraid to DFA somebody who needs to get DFA'd, or be afraid to switch things up every so often. The margins are so thin in playoff atmospheres against the very best teams. That's the lesson. Like, this looked like the playoffs because we couldn't hit. Sometimes you're not going to hit in the playoffs because sometimes you're facing Yoshinobu Yamamoto at the peak of his powers. And then you need to win that game. And they were close and they failed. And in the third game, they were close, and they got a massive hit against Tyler Glasnow and held off the Dodgers late and had two runners on with two outs on the ninth, and Mookie Betts struck out against Clay Holmes. And I better not hear ever again, by the way, Clay Holmes just doesn't have the skin for this type of thing. Oh, really? like got the first two outs in a two-run game in a must-win, then gave up singles to the bottom of the lineup, including Kike Hernandez, who crushed us all weekend for some reason, and had to face the best player on the Dodgers and maybe the best overall player in baseball with the game on the line as the de facto winning run at the plate, and he got him chasing on a perfectly placed slider. I think Clay Holmes has the stones for this. That doesn't mean he's going to save every game he appears in, but I think he maybe has the mental fortitude to handle the situation. But guess what? First two games of this series, they don't win. Dennis Santana rears his ugly head in the bullpen in the first one. They push Ian Hamilton a little too far. He hangs a slombio to Teoscar Hernandez. They lose after the failed bunt situation. Dennis Santana does come in the second game and gas cans himself, throws almost 40 pitches, an inning and a third, three earned runs. Anthony Rizzo, like we said, stood out as a weak point, currently mired in a 1-for-29 slump. And had several weak at-bats in the first two games. The Yankees didn't score in the first one until Aaron Judge in the bottom of the 11th, down two. Guess what? Third game, you don't need to win. You could get swept at home, but it certainly feels better if you do win. What do? Rizzo, day off, clear his head. DJ LeMahieu at first base. Imperfect solution, to say the least. They need to explore different upgrades there, but got him off his feet, and they said he might not play tonight either, so we'll see what happens there. But not a coincidence that the game where they take Rizzo out to reset is the game where they look a little bit stronger offensively and defensively. What else did they do? Dennis Santana, obviously arm burdened from the night before, playing with a short pen. Maybe that's what convinced him to finally do it. But they said, enough of this. We don't need a guy with a 6 ERA and as the last man of the bullpen just because if we cut him, he has to pass through waivers. We shouldn't be scared of that. He's been here for 2+ months. Matt Blake couldn't do anything with him. Below average, subpar. The breaking ball is interesting spin. Good whiff. But he comes in and there's a look that the worst reliever on the Yankees has had.
Fading every time.
The worst reliever on the Yankees for the last 20+ years of my life has looked the exact same. Since relievers in the 90s used to just be guys who threw 86 with bad breaking balls and they get their ass kicked, except for the closer. And the Yankees had Jeff Nelson and Mike Stanton and Ramiro Mendoza, who I never really liked that much growing up, but it's tangent, whatever. The worst reliever in the Yankees bullpen has looked the same for 20+ years. Throws 95, has no idea where it's going. Breaking ball looks loopy. Throws an awful fastball outside the zone, an awful slider outside the zone, sets up for the fastball to be tattooed or a hanging breaker to be cranked on the very next pitch. And that person comes in when the Yankees are up by 8. That person leaves and the Yankees are up by 4. And you go, man, it would have been nice if this person could fucking handle that job. And then luckily, after 2 months of deluding themselves and the idea that they can carry somebody like Dennis Santana and maybe they'll be able to take advantage, they finally said, this guy's not as good as the guys that we have in the minors. Who cares if we have to DFA him? Ron Marinaccio is better. We're eventually going to have to DFA somebody else. It's probably going to be Michael Tonkin. We're going to have to welcome, you know, I hope they find a way to sneak Cody Poteet through for a while longer. I have some thoughts. They're going to trade for one or two bullpen arms at the deadline. Bullpen's not finalized, but first two games against the Dodgers didn't go the way we wanted them to. I'd like to think Brian Cashman walked in on Sunday and went, why the fuck are we carrying this bad reliever? And somebody in the lieutenant field was like, well, because technically we have to, he goes, I know we have to DFA him. I don't care. He's not good. These games are won and lost at the margins, and now Dennis Santana will not be looming in the 11th inning of a 2-2 game anymore.
Yeah.
He won't be appearing in a 4-run game in the 6th inning. We don't have to see him anymore because he's not good enough to be on this team, and now he's gone. But, it's obvious to the rest of us. 2 months is a long – 2 months is a long time to be dealing with this, just be accepting like, well, yeah, guy's not good, but if we – you don't understand. If we demote him, he's gone forever. I go, no, I do understand. He should be gone forever. He's not good. And there we go. Job done. And it took two games against the Dodgers to really realize it. But job done. He's gone now.
Magic Cashman just walks into the room. Why is Dennis Santana still here? And
why is Dennis Santana still here? Why do we ever bring him
fuck
in?
Up. He's done here? Now.
Yeah.
Don't speak. It was a rhetorical question. We do have to thank Dennis Santana, though, because the comeback against the Giants never would have been possible if he didn't blow it.
Yes.
So come on, let's be nice. And look, these players, sometimes this is just their role. Eat a spot for 6 weeks, try and stay afloat. But again, the argument we had last week is could just be Ron Marinaccio, who's better and is still pitching at a fairly consistent magnitude in the minor league. So it's not like you're saving him for anything. bring him back up. We had the evidence over the last month. Should have just done it. Where were we?
Well, if he struggles, Ron Marinaccio, too, if he struggles for whatever reason, by the way, they love to demote him. It's their favorite thing is demoting Ron Marinaccio. Like, do that again if you have to. I'd rather you not, but if you have to, demote him again. I guess lesson learned.
Oh, lessons learned, yeah.
Yeah.
What did I learn? I learned that they need to figure something out. Well, the world at least realized that the Yankees need some sort of change or adjustment. And I don't think it's urgent. I just think when the trade deadline comes, like, you have to figure out bench or starting first baseman or starting second baseman or starting third baseman. It's one of those things. And why? It's because the bottom of the lineup does not produce outside of Trent Grisham. Trent Grisham's swing is hilarious. It's like a fucking pitching wedge, but then it goes like 460 feet. It's just wild. You have a 60 yard shot on the golf course and you're just trying to poke it out of the woods. But you look at the bottom of the lineup for the rest of this series and look, like, I'm not getting on Giancarlo Stanton because he's been fine this year. There's still room for improvement. He shouldn't have an OPS under 800. It is what it is. He's gotten clutch hits. He's actually performed fairly consistently, but the guy goes 0 for 13 with 7 strikeouts. Can't do that when Juan Soto's out. You just can't. So I'll leave it at that. So in terms of the change that needs to be made, I don't know what it is, but I read Brian Hoke's mailbag today. People are wondering when Jason Dominguez is coming back. Brian Hoke said that the Yankees don't see a plan with him in the fold because we have Verdugo, we have Soto, we have Judge, and we have Stanton. And I couldn't fucking disagree more, because there are days where you could give Verdugo the day off. There are days, plenty of days, where you can give Stanton the day off. There are days where you can give Rizzo plenty of days off and repurpose things and figure them out. I don't know what the change needs to be, but Stanton consistently in the lineup every day does not need to happen. Gleyber Torres every day in the lineup does not need to happen. Anthony Rizzo every day in the lineup does not need to happen. Go down the list. Look at what the bottom of the lineup did this series. Last night was their best night, and they went 3 for 13. This is batters 6, 7, 8, and 9. 3 for 13 with 0 extra base hits and a ground into a double play. The night before, 1, 2, 3, 4, they went – oh, no, actually that was their best night, but they had Jose Trevino pinch hit and got a hit. Either way, DJ LeMahieu got two – it was all singles. We're singling people to death, and that was also a blowout. The game was they hadn't done anything up until the point when the game got busted open. And then the night before, on Friday night, you had – 0 hits from hitters 5 through 9. So you went 0 for 20. 1 for 20. You had 1 hit from Trent Grisham, which was a single. And this is not what the lineup was. The lineup, the luxury aspect with the Yankees lineup is that the bottom of the lineup kills you. And we've seen it at points in time in the season when Judge when Judge was struggling, but he was still grinding out at bats, when Juan Soto was dominating and people were trying to pitch around him or do their best to do that, when Giancarlo Stanton was running into pitches make up for get the pitchers dancing around the guys in the top of the lineup. I don't know what needs to be done here, but it's clear now that everybody has seen this team. It's a very good team. It's a very talented team, but one of those changes needs to happen. Either we need a more competent bench, we need people mixed in a little bit more often, Jason Dominguez, if that's the case, or there needs to be a full-time position change either at first, second, or third. I love DJ LeMahieu. I'm not sure what we're going to be able to get from him. And I think he's better suited as a part-timer anyway, because he's versatile. And I don't know if he could be on his feet on an everyday basis at this point, because he's been consistently injured for now 4 years. That lesson has fully been learned, because it was on the national stage. It was against the second best team in the league, arguably, or the third best, I guess, because the Phillies are ahead. And in order to get to where you need to go for the World Series, is you need competitive at bats at least six of the spots out of the lineup. And I don't think the Yankees are maybe getting four, maybe.
I loved watching the finale of the series, of course.
It was great.
I loved the ensuing conversation on Twitter about potential infield options moving forward. I loved watching Luis Renjifo get floated as a trade option. If you have not been paying attention to the Angels, he's hitting 300. He's sort of this year's Jaime Candelario, where it's like, hey, you know, this team that's not very good that you haven't been watching, they have a random third baseman hitting 320 with some pop, and he's a switch hitter, and you should consider trading for him. It's like, oh, yeah, I think we'll hear that name a lot over the next month or so. They're wedded to DJ LeMahieu. They're not wedded to him as a starter. They said this offseason he was going to be their leadoff hitter. While he was injured, Anthony Volpe went and took that. And when DJ LeMahieu came back, what did they do? They shove him into the leadoff spot? Nope. They hit him ninth.
Yep.
They moved him around a little bit. They clearly don't feel that they owe DJ LeMahieu anything. If he's not hitting, he could end up in the Anthony Rizzo category. Right now, he's the backup plan for Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah.
And so quickly, before we sign off, Rizzo got the brunt of the national scorn this week. And just because people who maybe hadn't seen him since the concussion last year saw him for the first time and went, huh, that's weird. His OBP is 80 points below his career average. Like, oh, he's one of the, 10 worst producing regulars since May 23rd, 2023.
Yeah. It just made me think some Yankee fans aren't watching until there's a big series.
That's a chart that I actually saw. Like, wow, one of the 10 worst performers since May 23rd, 2023. Did anything happen on that day, notably, around the end of May 2023? You losers. I don't even have it in me to get on Anthony Rizzo's case.
No.
He got brained by Tatis Jr. last year and lost his faculties piece by piece and rehabbed this offseason and occasionally showed flashes of still possessing the ability to hit a ball 400 feet with powerful velocity, but mostly can't do it and has defensive lapses that he never had before and clearly is still affected by the traumatic brain injury.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not anti-Anthony Rizzo. It's an uncomfortable conversation because the reality is that he's not just receding with age. He's receding with a combination of age and dulled reaction time because of an inciting incident that happened. I don't want to see the mess with chemistry. It's going to be Rizzo's call whether he is de-emphasized to the point of not playing at all or just taken off his feet a couple of times a week or what have you. I mean, they're not going to make a decision without Anthony Rizzo, but if he's the leader that we believe him to be, he's not going to demand to play while compromised, while dragging the team down. Could be Ben Rice. Not sure who else you move into the first base slot. Unfortunately, Aaron Judge, imperfect fit to say the least. Giancarlo Stanton ain't playing first. Alex Verdugo ain't playing first. Juan Soto ain't playing first. Jason Dominguez ain't playing first. So it's not so easy. But Jason Dominguez hitting 380 right now with a 1.119 OPS and 71 minor league at-bats and six bombs at the age of 21. He will be here sooner rather than later. They will figure out a way to make Jason Dominguez work. But trade options, whether it's a third baseman move DJ to first or whether it's a first baseman and knock Rizzo off the platform full time, they're going to have to figure that out. On the exact flip side, I think Cody Bote weirdly gets the award for most impactful positive performance in this series. I know Trent Grisham got a lot of love for yesterday's game, and I know Aaron Judge now has superior numbers to basically every hitter in the league after being borderline unplayable in April. But Cody Bote is such a valuable piece.
Yep.
As they head down the stretch, they're going to need a sixth starter. They're going to need a seventh starter. They're going to need to figure out a way to keep this guy on the roster because such a valuable change of pace in a rotation where Luis Gil throws 99 with a 91 mile an hour changeup. Cody Bote is so old school and it works. And it's a lot like Nestor Cortez's emergence in 2022 of like, this should not still be working, but it works every day because this guy is so pinpoint and so prepared. I don't know if it's going to last forever, but I know I don't want to say goodbye to him later this summer.
Absolutely not. The best case scenario, in my opinion, with this team is that you have a full rotation, right? Cole, Rodon, Stroman, Schmidt, Luis Gil. That's your five. And then assuming everybody's healthy at a later date, the bullpen should have Cody Bote and Nestor in there to provide length and to give, more rest and less and provide less pressure on the back end guys. And then, Tonkin's gone eventually. I know he's played an important role, but there's no need for him as time goes on, if we're just being honest. And then I think they got to get another left-hander, and I think that means one of Caleb Ferguson or Victor Gonzalez are gone, probably Lean Ferguson. And I don't know how else you kind of mess with the bullpen here. I'm still not entirely sold on Tommy Kahnle. I know he's probably going to be here regardless, but I think that they have to figure out a way later down the road to have that be the bullpen. If you have those two and Weaver providing length, you're going to be next to unstoppable. Starter has a bad day, you know, maybe Stroman or Rodon get we've seen them laboring, you know, through 3-4 innings. Maybe they don't get through the fourth and it's a close game. Nestor or Cody Poteet come in. Mm-hmm. Four more innings solved. Bridge the gap to the end of the bull. It's like, instead of using six relievers, use two. And look, when Cole comes back too, I do not think he's going to be throwing 95 bullets right off the bat. That's not going to be the case. Nope. So you're going to need this length from these guys. Those three, Nestor, Poteet, and Weaver, will be incredibly valuable if they can go anywhere between 2 and 4 innings, and they can manage to not, you know, have the wheels fall off like we've seen Dennis Santana or Caleb Ferguson do countless times this year. You welcome Ron Marinaccio back. Look, I can't crunch the roster right now, but that's the way it should. That's the way it should look for me. And Anthony Rizzo, we could talk about him all day. It's a waste of time. It's also unkind to him. He's dealing with something. I know we were critical. I was especially critical, mostly because of the frustration that stemmed from the injury last year. It's like nobody was on top of it. I don't know if he was correctly reporting symptoms or not.
Yeah.
Either way, whatever has happened, it's now reached a point where he's been unplayable for a while. So it's not really professional to beat the dead horse.
Nope.
There does need to be some sort of change. If he's a bench guy for vibes for the remainder of the year, that's fine. If he's if he's playing in 2-3 games a week, I'm also not opposed to that. I'm just not sure what the value of, you know, what his value is if he's in the lineup every day batting. What is he even batting now after Saturday night?
That's a great question. As someone who is not.
Yeah, 224 with a 285 on base and a 339 slugging. Like, that's him and Gleyber Torres have the same stats.
Yeah, they're both feels bad.
Yeah. And it's just what's happened and what is. It's sad. But if this team wants to win a World Series this year, there has to be some sort of restructuring on this. But you have the core of the stars, you have the guys who can drive, you know, who can be in the driver's seat and take control of the big moments. Now everything else needs to be just a little bit more refined on the edges, and the team will be a-okay, but these can't go ignored. It's just better to have a regular conversation about it instead of screaming about it on Friday night and making everybody think you're a moron. That's yes. All.
7 homers this year, and my follow-up question to that stat is when?
Seriously?
When were those?
Why don't I remember any of them?
Why don't I remember any of them? Two in the last 30 days. I've been here the last
30 days. One against the Brewers, I think, which everybody who padded stats in that series didn't count.
I remember he hit like 4 in an 8-game span, if I'm not mistaken.
Let's see. I got baseball.
Look it up. Yeah, I got it too. He had one early one against Oakland, one against Oakland the next day. No. One against Milwaukee, one against Milwaukee the next day. So that's 4 in a 6-game span in mid-April.
No offense. Didn't matter. 15-3 and 15-5 wins against the Brewers where they were throwing a bunch of nobodies.
Big Again. One against Detroit, big one at the Rays, homered against Toronto earlier in the year. And again, May 10th was the most recent one. So 30 days, we're really stretching it. We're about to have 0 in the last 30 days.
Yep. And he has, yeah, it's just mostly singles, man. He has 2 extra base hits. He has 3 extra base hits over the last almost 30 days.
Yeah.
And if you even go, yeah, it's May 12th. May 12th, he hit a double. He's had no homers since. Mm-hmm. And he hit a double in San Fran. And then he hit a double against the Twins. But over his last this entire month, he has one hit. He is 1-4, 9-12, 16-20. He's 1-29 this month. That's it. I mean, I hope he's good. I hope he's okay. That's all I hope. It's just you cannot get to the trade deadline and look at this roster and think that you don't need to upgrade first, second, or third. It's just crazy.
Yep. Not his fault, I don't think. I would not place blame on him. And the average, you know, 224. He had 224 and was awesome 2 years ago, but he had 32 home runs that year with an 800 OPS. And this year he's not doing that. So yeah, tough conversation. I thought we could wait another 2 weeks or so. We can't. And they agreed we can't. And they took him out of the lineup and gave him a little temporary benching. So apparently we are being proactive here. And hopefully we have his best interest at heart as we make potential future maneuvers, which now seem inevitable. Well, go Yankees. Not the worst series. I've seen worse. Pretty epic finale. Pretty good job by Clay Holmes, Trent Grisham and company. And Aaron Judge, the captain, is the captain for a reason. Two forgotten home runs. When we do the Aaron Judge's home run game in the same way that we just did Anthony Rizzo's, we're going to forget the two that were on Saturday night in that awful loss, but not going to forget the finale one, that bomb that gave them much needed insurance. Moving into Kansas City and Boston this week, four games in KC, three at Fenway. Yikes. Followed by the Orioles at home. Yikes. Just a bunch of yikes this month. The Yankees' challenges never end. Hopefully we get Juan Soto back for a good portion of them. I will be out for the next several podcasts. Thomas Carinata holding down the fort.
Yep.
But you can find me on Twitter at Adam Weiner. In the meantime, you can talk to me. I just probably won't respond because I'll be speaking a foreign language. Viva Italia.
Hey,
Thomas, where can they find you in the meantime for all the notes that they're trying to send me that I'm ignoring?
Yes, at Tommy's_take. Send me some podcast outlines at Yanks Go Yard FS. That's the official Twitter account. Please read yanksgoyard.com. Reading is good. Listening is good too, but reading is perhaps more important for comprehension and literacy purposes. So head on over to the website, read all the content we got up there for you. Thanks for tuning in. Please like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you're looking to sign up at Caesar Sportsbook and you're a first time user, YGY1000 is the promo code. Tell your friends, tell your family. And otherwise, we'll see you on Thursday. 4-7 with the Royals incoming. Royals are hot. Good team.
Yep.
Good team. Potential we get they run circles around us because they're very athletic and they play a very traditional brand of baseball based on what I've watched from them this year. But we have been pitching very well. We're hitting the ball for power. So let's see what happens. It's going to be a fun series. Maybe Soto's back, maybe he's not, but you could find that out on yanksgoyard.com. So get clicking.
Will Jason Dominguez join the team at Fenway Park? I don't think so, but cool if he did. Cool if he did. I'll check the box scores. I'll see everybody when I get back. Until then, take care. Thanks for enjoying. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Keep reading. We'll see you when we get back.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.